When we started this podcast 3 years ago, Steve, the whole point of this was to try and take a step back from talking about the news every day and instead try and contemplate with clear heads and refreshed minds and try and think about the issues underlying the news.
Hasn't really worked out that way, has it?
Events kind of blew us off course, which is in many ways literally Brexit, but also a metaphor for Brexit as well. Like Theresa May, we thought we'd try not to give a running commentary on Brexit, but have ended up doing so. Not quite for as many hours as Theresa May, but certainly quite a significant amount of time. We are once again providing a running commentary on all things Brexit. We're going to try and do that by answering four questions. Meaningful Vote franchise. Now, there was going to be Meaningful Vote 3, if you remember, that's the kind of money spinner starring Michael Caine, except that ran into problems. There were creative differences with executives like John Bercow, and so the writers did a bit of a kind of Marvel-style spin-off, didn't they? We had a look at a different character in the Meaningful Vote franchise, in that the writers decided to separate out the withdrawal agreement from the political declaration. Why did Theresa May do that?
It's an attempt to try and get the actual withdrawal agreement over the line. I suppose the thinking is that if you separate out the withdrawal agreement from the political declaration, you can maybe say this is just, you're just voting on the core principles of the matter, not the language that's being used to house it or whatever. In reality, as we've seen, it doesn't really make much difference there. There's still no support for the deal in the House.
No, I mean, partly because one of the really controversial things is the backstop. That's in the withdrawal agreement, not in the political declaration. Theresa May also said to Tory MPs, I will resign if you vote for this, which then also meant that Labour MPs were even less likely to try and vote for this withdrawal agreement.
Yeah, if the withdrawal agreement is passed and then Theresa May resigns, actually what you've got is a situation where any other Brexiteer, in most likely, MP, is going to become the leader of the Conservative Party. And they are going to want, in all likelihood, to try and backtrack on that withdrawal agreement, which is problematic for a number of reasons. One, it just reopens the wound of Brexit and just businesses not knowing what needs to happen or what needs to get done. And it risks alienating the EU even further by basically saying, hey, look, we passed all of this stuff to try and move things along to get what we want. By the way, we didn't mean a word of it.
Well, it's impossible. The EU would just refuse to
reopen the negotiations.
And they've said that several times.
And by that point, well, guess what, guys? It's an international treaty. If you want to not abide by it, cool, but that screws over us diplomatically, economically, in every single way, because it basically makes us a bad faith actor.
And so, unsurprisingly, Labour MPs did not want to vote to make a hard Brexit a Prime Minister. And there's also, without the political declaration, which you would need, I mean, there was some debate as to whether or not you separating out the withdrawal agreement from the political declaration was in breach of the Article 50 terms anyway. But there's no way that Labour could commit themselves to voting for, as Keir Starmer said, a blindfold Brexit with no idea of what that end state will be, and an end state that could easily change. So that goes down by 58 votes. In the pub after the CLP meeting the evening before, I predicted the vote would go down by 50 votes.
But you didn't record it, so it doesn't count.
Like all of my best predictions, I don't actually make them on the podcast. Only the incorrect ones, apparently, I can make and actually be held accountable. Theresa May, I think, has since said that the production unit is in line for Meaningful Vote 4. But the situation at the moment is we've got indicative votes on Monday, and whatever is found by MPs to have a majority support there will go head-to-head with Meaningful Vote 4 and Theresa May's deal. And if no decision is made, apparently we're heading for a general election.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing to say is, you know, we've already had, as you say, these spin-offs from the main Brexit series, where we actually had some indicative votes already. Some, you know, some pilots have been put out there for the TV series spin-off, and none of them got a majority in the House anyway. Parliament literally voted against every single potential option, and yet we're going to have another set of indicative votes early next week as well.
But that's because, and that maybe this is kind of the first question we can talk about, is why don't the British political establishment understand the principles of preferential voting? Because Oliver Letwin, or Sir Oliver Letwin, made it very clear when he was putting these votes forward that there were going to be two stages of voting. That MPs were going to vote on all options, so 16 original options were submitted, 8 of which were picked by John Bercow. And then on Monday, there would be a second round. It's not surprising, I don't think, that no option got a clear majority. The whole point is, it's about trying to see where opinion can coalesce around. So presumably what happens on Monday is Bercow selects those
top four, say, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then we see, okay, where can MPs meet a consensus for? In exactly the same way that in the French presidential elections, you have a first round of voting, no one gets a majority, so the top two head off into a runoff. We've talked several times about British politics and the British political system kind of being broken. I think this is one of those examples where, because there's just this emphasis on majoritarianism and assuming you'll get a majority first time, when that's not going to happen. It was always going to be the case that you'd need to have a preferential voting system and try and work out what preferences is. And I can't tell if it's just ignorance or what.
It's just the fact that the entire situation seems to become almost sum up perfectly the issue that the British political kind of like establishment in Parliament has around Brexit, where you have the full range of options presented to them. There are a couple of votes, like I think it was Ken Clark's Custom Union, which I've heard suggested as the name for a rock band, which I think would be a pretty decent name. Failed by like, what, 2-3 votes? Something?
Eight
votes. So single figures. I believe the independent group en masse basically voted against it. Why would they do that? Well, it's going to be all about because they want to just stay in the EU. They're not viewing it at this stage as being something to actively explore a customs union, because they just want their preferred outcome, and that's the issue for a lot of this. But a lot, because the voting method is for or against, everybody's just kind of gotten into this mindset, I feel, of this is what I want. Everything else can kind of go hang. But then you've also got some other interesting cases where there's something like a handful of MPs, about 20 or so, most of which were Conservative, one of which was Labour, who voted against everything. Every single option. Now, these options ranged from like the full range of Brexit opinion. On the one hand, you'd got, I think it was put forward by Peter Bone.
And John Barron was no deal.
Yeah, which was no deal, and thou shalt not ever bring any form of indicative vote back to this house ever again. Right the way down to the other side, where you've got some outright Article 50 revocation. The fact that around about 20-odd MPs, or however many it was, voted against every single one of those is mind-boggling. Voting against something or in principle, I can kind of see that. But when you have so many options in front of you and there's not one which matches your principles, that's not a principled stance to my mind. That's just sheer idiocy and sheer bloody-mindedness, which is taking the country towards that cliff edge.
There were also people like Dennis Skinner, I think, who voted for no deal, hilariously, and also for Labour's Brexit plan. Which are mutually contradictory.
And again, this is the other issue where so much of this, rather than being a free vote for the most part, is still being whipped and is still being viewed as part of parliamentary games and manoeuvrings. Case in point, as I mentioned before, the independent group. Well, they're clearly just focused on their outcome. They're clearly focused on still trying to present themselves as being the ones who are the most pro-EU. Same goes for the Lib Dems. They are trying to basically utilise their votes to demonstrate for the next general election, whenever that may be, and it looks looking like it might be a lot sooner than we were hoping. Hey, look, we're the most pro-EU. Hey, look, we're the ones that you should vote for because Jeremy Corbyn betrayed you.
As a side issue, I think it's been obvious that both Independent Group and, or Change UK, as we should know them, or the people playing Tig. I still want to call them playing Tig, to be fair. And the Lib Dems and the SNP and Plaid have all been trying to use the people's vote issue as a stick to beat Labour with. Hence, Sarah Wollaston putting forward the amendment on the people's vote a couple of weeks ago when the people's vote campaign didn't want them to put the amendment through.
Yep.
But it was done essentially because they knew that Labour would whip to abstain it, and then they can tell everyone how terrible Labour is and isn't Jeremy Corbyn a secret Tory facilitating Brexit or something.
Yep.
Then Barry Gardner, everyone's favourite politician who put his face and wants on a leaf, comes on the Today programme and says Labour is not the party of Remain, is pure ammunition for, in a subsequent snap election, for every single party who's trying to make the case that if you really want to stay in the EU, you don't vote for Labour, you vote for this party.
Yeah.
It's just stupid politics. There are so many better ways of saying it than just saying Labour's not the party of Remain. You can say, look, we've tried to bring, a bit like Jeremy Corbyn has said, actually, what unites a lot of people who voted Leave and Remain is the economic situation, the fact they feel left behind. You can make that case, but just to try and alienate 17 million people, well done, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this boils back down to, again, that notion of political manoeuvring versus principle and doing what you consider to be the best thing for the country. Because Labour is still, to this day, trying to walk that tightrope of we can't offend either the Leave voters or the Remain voters. And the reality is, the tightrope's about to get to that same cliff edge.
Because it's kind of turned into a bit of a culture war, and as we said, I think, on the last time we talked about Brexit, attitudes have hardened in the 2 or 3 years since. If you'd had these indicative votes 2 years ago,
you might have been fine.
And actually, I think they'd be a very different outcome. But now that it feels like public opinion is kind of splitting between No Deal and People's Vote, apparently Dennis Skinner's the only person who can bridge that gap. Maybe we should make him interim Prime Minister.
God.
But I think it's also symptomatic of the fact that Brexit means very different things to different people. Actually, when you look at the trade-offs that people are willing to make, they would much rather have an EEA Norway-style Brexit, in that they would prioritise single market access and help for the and protecting jobs and business, rather than a harder Brexit and saying, actually, we find controlling immigration a bigger issue. Now it's completely split between people who want to remain altogether and people who think it's perfectly fine just to crash out and crash the economy, cause a hard border in Northern Ireland. Food shortages, heaven knows what.
Both of those ideas are the simplest responses to the question of what should our relationship to the EU be. We should have no deal or we should stay. This has taken so long, the fact that nobody's gotten anywhere with anything on this front means that people are sick to death of it, which means that the simplest ideas, which resonate more with the kind of the direction they were leaning before, resonate strongest and forces people into like one side or the other. Let's use myself as an example. I voted to remain. My initial kind of preference was to let's honour the vote. Like, referendums should have meaning. Referendums should, you know, the government should follow through with them, even if they are technically only advisory. And I was thinking, let's go for a soft Brexit. Let's stay in the single market. Let's stay in the customs union, something like that. And then let's just get out, and then we'll still have a close relationship, but we're outside the EU. Honours the principle of the referendum, but doesn't screw us over economically. Now, I signed the, let's just freaking revoke all of this nonsense, because we, if nothing else, we need time to work out what the hell it is we want, if not just abandon this whole entire thing. Previously, if there had been a people's vote, I might have voted for a soft leave option. Now, I'm not going to, if it comes down to it, and I'm just going to vote remain, because I don't want to go through this bulwulus anymore. It's been so time consuming. It's just sucked up so much of the time and energy of this country. People just want it over one way or another. And that means you're either for Brexit and you want no deal, or you're against it and you want to stay.
Shall we talk about something joyful then? How much joy should we take on the ERG infighting that's happening this week?
I mean, it's entertaining. That's definitely for certain. But I don't know if I can really take joy from it, because
You find no joy in Bill Cash, a man who spent 40 years campaigning to leave the EEC and then the EU, saying he can't vote for the withdrawal agreement to take us out of the EU on the day that we meant to leave the EU. And he manages to blame Theresa May and call it betrayal.
Six months to a year ago, I would have been all over that schadenfreude. Now, it's just further evidence of how screwed we are. And again, as I said, I just want it over.
You take no pleasure in Jacob Rees-Mogg saying he was going to vote against the deal because it's the biggest vassalage since King John and it would make us into a slave state, then says he'll vote for it if the DUP do. Then even though the DUP won't vote for the deal, he voted for it anyway.
I think it's just a damning indictment of the state and potentially lack of principles of our parliamentary class.
You take no pleasure in Boris Johnson being on the front page of the Daily Telegraph saying that Theresa May should be like Moses and take her people out to Exodus, forgetting that that led to 40 years in the wilderness, and then voting for the deal on Friday.
No, just because I try not to pay any attention to anything Boris Johnson does these days.
You take no pleasure in Dave Jones standing up into an ERG meeting. Well, he quotes Tacitus on the ancient Britons who were defending Britain against the Romans and says we need to be like them, to which a lot of Tory MPs who are classicists point out that they all got massacred. You take no pleasure in that.
I wasn't aware of that one. That was actually quite entertaining.
I just think it's wonderful. And I think actually what it does, in terms of the parliamentary arithmetic, in terms of whether a deal passes or not, what kind of Brexit is more likely or is not more likely. Nigel Dodds coming out with a wonderful googly this week and saying maybe we should just remain that way, the best way of safeguarding union.
Yeah. That was a massive kind of like facepalm moment. It's just like, well done, Nigel. Like, you've realised that Northern Ireland voted to remain, despite, like, the DUP being, like, the biggest party and, you know, being pro-Brexit. You've realised that you're in the minority of your own country. Now, how about you actually get on with it and act on it?
But I think the other thing is, even if a general election is not necessarily inevitable in the next month or two, I feel like a Tory leadership contest is. And therefore, the fact you've got ERG splits at this moment, I think,
matters.
Yes, it really does. Because I think whenever we've done periodic Conservative leadership speculations, we've assumed it's going to be easy for the ERG to get its candidate in the final two because they vote en bloc, en masse. That's not necessarily the case anymore. So you could see a more reasonable candidate go up through the middle, potentially.
Absolutely. What you've got now is a situation where so many of the leading ERG lights have effectively betrayed the cause.
Voting to leave the EU. I don't understand.
What we are seeing is the typical kind of People's Front of Judea, Judea's People Front syndrome that we see on the left. Like, normally this doesn't necessarily happen on the right. But as the right's become more ideological over the decades, it only makes sense you end up in that situation where that right towards hard right faction within the Conservatives end up eating each other in the same way that the left to the hard left does. Fundamentally, they're still the same sort of people. They're largely relatively extreme in their political opinions, and they identify themselves quite strongly by their political opinions. It forms quite an integral part of their identity, which means when someone diverges from it who was supposed to be an ally, they have become Judas, they have betrayed the cause, and they have become the persona non grata, which means Boris Johnson probably doesn't get through, which means pretty much anyone, Jacob Rees-Mogg, probably doesn't get through to Final Two should he decide to run, because enough of the ERG are going to be going, no, you betrayed us, you betrayed the true Brexit.
On the kind of vague subject of Tory leadership, how is Theresa May still Prime Minister?
I just don't know.
As Nicola Sturgeon said, she appears to have fallen on her sword and then missed.
It's just absolutely astounding. Like, I mean, she's at least seemingly gotten to the point where she admits at some point she does have to go, because she basically said, look, if you vote this through, I will leave. Obviously, that hasn't happened. The withdrawal agreement hasn't gone through. So, weirdly, that means as a point of principle, she has to stay on, which I'm not quite sure how that works, but hey-ho, we are in the most banter-filled timeline, apparently. What else can go wrong that would make her leave? It's clear now, absolutely clear, that her withdrawal agreement isn't getting through. So there's literally no reason for her to make the offer again of, you vote for this, I will stand down, because it's just not happening. They can't get rid of her until December, or whenever it is, after that year-long period runs out, after the last attempt to get rid of her failed. What else is there that could happen that could force her out? The cabinet's collapsed around her. No one trusts each other. No one's able to unite in any meaningful way. And there's no logical successor. I mean, apparently David Lidington was being lined up as a potential successor.
Yeah, that reminds me of the thick of it Spinners and Losers episodes, where there's kind of leadership contenders who are possible for about half an hour and then aren't, and they're just dropped like hot plates.
Yeah, although actually I think the most interesting point I saw about the notion of like a Tory leadership successor being bland, boring, that no one had ever heard of before, not necessarily being a bad thing, was somebody pointed out that was basically how you would describe John Major. And yet Major went on to win general elections and actually had quite a successful prime ministerial career.
Wow, that's a bold claim that is going to need a lot of empirical evidence to back it up.
If you go back, the history books are going to look relatively positively on Major's period. There will be a couple of big issues, obviously, as
like the Maastricht nonsense and the bastards, it
collapsed, don't get me wrong,
the sleaze.
But the actual kind of legacy of him in various ones, whether you agree with it or not, was actually there, and he's still well liked.
But
now
he is now, because he's not prime minister anymore, in the same, like, it's kind of okay to like people now.
I mean, Blair's not liked. No,
that's because John Major didn't take us into a very stupid war. Historians will look kindly on John Major because historians are contrary bastards. Theresa May, bless her. Right, anyway, moving on. Final question then. Is a general election likely, and how much would it actually change?
At this point, I've got no idea how likely a general election it is. I've just given up kind of even thinking about it.
On a scale of banter to Bantasaurus Rex, if we assume that we are now in the kind of the banter timeline,
yeah,
does the level of banter get raised or lowered?
I think the most banter-filled kind of like result would be for there to be a general election and for it basically nothing much to change. So maybe Labour gain some, maybe Tories lose some, whatever, minor deviations in any direction, but there still not being enough for any party to have a majority, and certainly not a sizeable majority, which means whoever is in the largest party has to rely on someone else to get things through still.
See, I think actually in terms of the Bantasaurus timeline, I think every MP retain their seat with the same number of votes. That would be really brilliant. What I think is more likely, and I think still the possibilities for banter are strong with this one, is a similar situation to what you say, which would be Tories lose seats enough that their deal with the DUP can't be honoured anymore, because there isn't even Tories plus DUP doesn't make a majority. Labour gain seats, not enough for an overall majority. No one can form a government. I think John Curtis this week put out polling suggesting that was the case. The local election results last year also indicate that's kind of where the public was. I mean, I've said before, I do not think a general election will lead to a government with a majority to get a Brexit deal through, because both main parties are split.
But I think what a general election could lead to, and this is kind of, I think, would be the logical outcome of what Curtis's projection or where we are currently is. But basically, a general election would lead to Labour being the largest party, just reliant on the SNP and the Lib Dems. The SNP and the Lib Dems basically say, you want our support, we're having a people's vote. Remain is clearly an option on that table. So I think that might be the best and most effective route to get another referendum. And that I could see being something that Labour would go for at this point, because it means, at the very least, that their hands can be kind of washed of the situation. They don't have to make that call about what the relationship is. They can just go, no deal, Remain, and whatever unicorn Labour decides to present as a third option.
There's a couple of caveats, I think, to that analysis. I think one of them is first past the post does have the capacity to lead to big shifts.
Yeah.
So it's quite possible you could see big swings either way, both in for both people who voted tactically for Labour MPs in 2017 might not feel the need to do so again, or people, Tories who are strong leavers in Remain-ish seats, I could see big tactical swings against them as well, potentially. And again, it depends also then what Labour's Brexit position is. And I think Labour would have to promise a referendum on whatever deal comes out of Parliament.
It would also massively depends on actually who the candidates are going to be, because we've had situations this week where Dominic Grieve, head honcho of the Tory Remainers, as basically the process has started for him to effectively be deselected.
In the Remain seat, his seat voted 52% Remain.
Yeah, a Remain seat, but because his local party has absorbed an awful lot of the former UKIP vote and the former UKIP members, you know, his former UKIP opponent is now leading a campaign to get him deselected, and I think it was a motion of no confidence has been passed in him by about 30 or so votes, like
180 to 130,
something like that. So if you've got that situation where Remainers like Grieve maybe are being deselected by the Tories, what do they do? Are they going to jump ship to Change UK, as they're now being called, and then start playing TIG? Are they going to run as just genuine independents and just kind of try and squeak through on just being good, like, MPs, which by all accounts Grieve actually is? God only knows. I mean, he's certainly got the name recognition where he might manage it, but could others do it? I honestly couldn't say. And as a result of that, God knows what the results might be. And that's before we even take into the assumption that Change UK may actually be able to field enough candidates to make a difference across the board. I don't think they can at the moment. But given they've at the very least made the initial start of becoming a political party officially, rather than this weird private company / organisation with no accountability behind it, at least they're on the right track. And I don't necessarily think a general election is going to happen in the next 2 to 3 months. So maybe they do have enough time to get, even if it's just paper candidates out there on a number of target seats, that could be enough to throw a curveball into the mix.
I think the other thing is, if we assume that at the moment it looks like a general election probably leads to a Labour minority government, but probably doesn't lead to a Conservative administration.
Yeah.
And we assume that Theresa May is trying to threaten a general election to get MPs to vote for her Brexit deal. She needs about 30... Tory MPs, I think 25 or 30, to swing round. I don't see those MPs switching. I don't see people like Andrea Jenkins switching.
No.
I don't see people like John Redwood switching. So you're still trying to rely then on getting Labour MPs. Now, how are Labour MPs, how are they going to vote for May? Like, why would you vote for May's deal then?
The thing that
doesn't make any sense.
The only way I can see Labour MPs voting for Theresa May's deal, and this might even be one of the ways that they could actually make a meaningful vote for different to the meaningful votes 1 to 3, if Burko starts playing that little game again.
Well, I think invoking parliamentary procedure and precedent back from the 17th century, that's hardly playing games, is it, Steve?
You know my opinions on that from a previous episode. If they were to take meaningful vote for, make it, here's the withdrawal agreement, with or without the political declaration, I don't even know or care at the moment about that. Let's just focus on the actual agreement.
That is the MPs.
I know. But then I'm not being paid to care about it, so it's fine. I'm just hypothecating.
But we should be.
But if we forget that for the time being, and just focus on the withdrawal agreement, if you take the withdrawal agreement and add on, and it must be confirmed by the British public in a vote, a vote, well, suddenly you've got something which, that's Labour Party policy. That's actually what Labour's position has been for a while now. And that's not just the leadership's position, that's principled MPs like Jess Phillips kind of basically saying, whatever option we kind of go with this, it needs to be put to a vote in some form. And I could see that getting over, because it opens up the possibility of, well, then we can decide what goes on the ballot. And then we can go, clearly we need to seek a majority outright on this. We can make it a 1-2-3 ranking in some form, and then do AV. And then you've got May's deal, no deal, Remain.
No deal is not on that ballot.
Well, I mean, we've had that discussion again, but the
problem with that is completely sensible. It completely makes sense.
So it's never going to happen, of course.
Exactly. Theresa May's not going to do it.
No, absolutely.
Because she said she's not going to do it, and she is a woman of her word. No, hang on, that's not right.
But, I mean, and that fundamentally is the thing. It boils down to how desperate is she to get the agreement through.
But, well, she's desperate to get it through with Tory MPs. Like, she's pretended all the way along. From the day after losing her majority, she's acted like she kept it. There was that tone-deaf speech.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. One of the many, that day afterwards, basically not admitting she'd lost her majority and was going to carry on as before. So all the way along, she's assumed, well, I can just get it over the line with my MPs and the DUP. She's never tried to reach out. And when she's tried to reach out to Labour, she's done it in the most cack-handed fashion.
Absolutely.
She's not going to do it.
Absolutely, she has, and she won't. But it's the only way her deal's getting through. Like, I just cannot see any other path to it. She needs Labour votes. That's the only way you're going to get Labour votes, is by basically saying, here, we're going to give you Labour Party policy. And at that point, there's still an opportunity for you to then shape the debate, shape the question, influence what's going on, and maybe still end up in a situation where, if it does end up as being May's deal or Remain on the ballot, you could still end up in a situation where, let's be honest here, if the campaign is run as exactly well as it was last time, May's deal wins, because the Remain campaign was awful last time, and there's all the signs that are indicative that it could be exactly as bad this time.
What about the indicative votes?
The indicative votes could easily well be like, oh, actually, this one's got the parliamentary support. Let's say Ken Clark's Custom Union gets through. And, you know, gets into the top 10 with their first album.
Or it's just a custom union for things Ken Clark likes, like Hush Puppies
and jazz and cigars. Yeah. Jazz customs union. I don't even want to think about that. But let's say Ken Clark's custom union goes through Parliament, or has enough support in Parliament. That could then go on the ballot, and then it gets ignored because it's a complicated position rather than the simplest position on there. Like either, let's say no deal's not on there, of the simple position of Theresa May's deal, which people have at least heard of, versus Remain. So it becomes a third option, a second option, which nobody pays any attention to.
Right, we need to stop. We've got a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram. And Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @PeppermintWriter.
Mine is @AcousticRadical.
Happy plotting.